I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, either Gina Ortiz-Jones or Rolando Pablos will be the mayor of San Antonio. These two candidates reflect two very different views about how to tackle the challenges facing San Antonio. And for the first time, the mayor will be elected to serve a four-year term, making this possibly the most significant mayoral election in San Antonio in generations. And yet, looking at past examples, voter turnout is expected to be low, so only a few thousand voters will be making a decision for the rest of the city. The new mayor will set the course for economic development, tackling poverty, transportation, public utilities, and dealing with incredible growth. Both candidates join us today to take your questions. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio's municipal runoff election is June 7th. There are four unresolved city council races and the mayor's race. TPR's The Source is hosting live on-air debates for all the races. And today we have the runoff candidates for mayor. The candidates are Gina Ortiz-Jones and Rolando Pablos. The objective today is to have a civil exchange of ideas and solutions to help listener voters understand which candidate best represents their views and priorities. Candidates are encouraged to talk about themselves and their own vision for San Antonio. Candidates who try to disparage the other candidate or characterize their position, they'll be redirected on air. Their time will be cut, and the opponent is given an opportunity to respond. We're taking calls from listeners. These calls will be screened, and the callers are going to be prompted to ask issue-focused questions that are available to both candidates to be answered. Our format, we have a two-minute opening statements, and then we go to question and answers. The candidates have 2 minutes to respond. We go back and forth on who goes first on those. The answers are timed, and if the candidate exceeds that time, we have a bell that we ring. The candidates alternate who will be first to go to each question, and then there is a one-minute closing statement. We flipped a coin earlier to establish who will go first with opening statements, and so we decided it will be Gina Ortiz-Jones. And Gina Ortiz-Jones, you have 2 minutes for your opening statement.
Great. Well, thank you for having us. On this Memorial Day, let me extend my condolences to anybody in our community that has lost a loved one due to their service and sacrifice, and certainly our Gold Star families. I was fortunate to spend this morning at Fort Sam Houston at the memorial service there. And again, it's always just a reminder of the ultimate sacrifice that many play to protect our freedoms. I was also, as just mentioned in your previous segment, though, not everybody's service has always been recognized. I was thankful to be able to lay flowers at the now proper headstone of Corporal Jesse Moore, who unfortunately was executed in 1917 during the Houston race riots. This mayoral race, I look forward to making sure that our city is well led. I look forward to being a mayor for all. I look forward to also making sure that we treat everybody in our community with dignity and with respect. I'm a proud Air Force veteran, Iraq War veteran. I'm a proud first generation American. And when we think about the community, our challenges and opportunities as a community, I think we have to be cognizant of not only that what we are dealing with in our city, but also as your previous segment just mentioned, many of the challenges that are coming to us as a result of some of the cuts in funding for some of the programs that are so critical in our community, the DOGE cuts in particular, Social Security, Medicare, et cetera. On my website, I think it's important we are also thinking about the things we know we need to address. We need to fully invest in our young people to set our community up for success. We need to be more aggressive with affordable housing. We certainly need much more transparency around how some of these major developments in our community are moving forward to ensure, again, San Antonio gets a good deal. And we are doing as much as we can to address the generational inequities in our community. So, again, I look forward to bringing my service. I most recently served as the Undersecretary of the Air Force, managed a $173 billion budget, led 600,000 folks. Look forward to serving our city.
All right. Now we have 2 minutes for Rolando Pablos.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. And I, too, want to extend my condolences and honor our fallen heroes today. Listen, I just want to be able to restore the promise of San Antonio. I want a prosperous city. I want a city where all families can thrive. I think it's time to take our city in a different direction, a direction away from poverty. We've had poverty levels that are way too high for too long. I want to make sure that we bring prosperity to this community. And the way we do that is by not only educating our youth and upskilling our workforce, but also bringing investment, companies that will come here and bring quality jobs. And I think that's what's missing. And I will rely on my experience in economic development, in government, and in business to be able to do that. San Antonio has tremendous opportunities ahead of us. Our best days are ahead of us. We have excellent workforce. We have centers of excellence that are beyond any others here in Texas. The only thing is that we're falling behind other cities in Texas. They're taking companies away from us, and our children and grandchildren are going with them. So I'd like to be able to work as mayor, not only to improve those conditions, but also to be able to attract the investment, work with our state and federal leaders, and also the leaders in Mexico to be able to improve our economy, and also ensure that the city realizes its potential.
All right, let's go to our question and answer portion of our exchange of ideas today. And Rolando Pablos, you will be going first, and you'll have 2 minutes. Both of y'all are running to be mayor of San Antonio for the next 4 years. This is something new. We have not had a four-year term for a mayor in forever, as far as I can tell, looking at our history. So you will not be answerable to the voters until 2029. Neither of you have served on city council before. There's not much of a record to base, you know, trying to figure out who to support. So why should voters trust that you're going to keep your word about how you plan to govern for the next 4 years? What's that trust level like? Where's that come from?
Well, first of all, I ask you to look at my background, my track record. Every commitment I've made, I've fulfilled, I've satisfied. Every time I've worked in public service, served the government, I have fulfilled my entire commitment. When I was Secretary of State, I filled my entire commitment. Same thing when I was on the Public Utility Commission and as Racing Commissioner. So my track record of actually fulfilling my obligations is there. The other thing is, you know, I'd ask you to take a look at the commitment that I've made to this community. For 40 years, I came here in 1985. I was born in Mexico, but my parents brought us here so that we can seek the American dream. I came to San Antonio in 1985. I've been here ever since, and I've been heavily involved in this community. So take a look at my community involvement. I've posted my resume online. You can take a look at all the things I've done. I'm glad to be sitting here at the Alameda Theater. I was on the board of the Alameda whenever we were negotiating the deal with Texas Public Radio. So you look at what I've done here, that should be an indication. Look at what I've done in government, how I've fulfilled my obligations in government, and then also take a look at what I've done in business. I'm a small business owner. I've worked in the corporate world, and I've also worked in economic development. So I hope to be able to bring all that skill set to the table, which is a varied skill set, which is what San Antonio needs right now.
All right, now 2 minutes for Gina Ortiz-Jones. Why should voters trust you about the promises that you're making about when you run for the mayor?
Yeah, well, I think it's also important when you look at how I have spent my time in public service, certainly as an Air Force veteran, Iraq War veteran, and then most recently as the Undersecretary of the Air Force. It was about ensuring our men and women had what they needed to be successful, ensuring we were making smart investments, and also recognizing the ways in which we could ensure everybody that came to us could serve to their full potential. Folks can read a lot, actually, about many of the barriers that I was proud to knock down so that those courageous enough to protect and to serve and defend the Constitution could do so to their full potential. I'm very proud of that. One of the things I'm actually very proud of is working to bring back the citizenship, the opportunity for folks going through basic at Lackland Air Force Base to be able to get their citizenship. Again, I know it's important that we are thinking of everybody's talents and contributions in our community. I have also committed to doing monthly town halls. you know, if elected, we rotate this throughout the city council districts to be able to have that face-to-face conversation to hear directly from voters about how things are going, how they would like to see improvements. I'm also thankful for the trust that many have given me through their endorsements. People like Secretary Julian Castro, Mayor Phil Hardberger, those who have done this job and those who know what it takes. I'm also very proudly endorsed both by Representative Joaquin Castro as well as Representative Casar. You know, numerous state representatives, both State Senators Jose Menendez as well as Roland Gutierrez, as well as, you know, those that are actually fighting for working people and making sure that we are cutting people into these deals. I'm proudly endorsed by the teachers. I'm proudly endorsed by the Communication Workers of America. You know, those that understand we need to, yes, bring good jobs here to San Antonio, but ensure that we're supporting working families. And I think their support for me speaks to my commitment to this community.
All right, let's go to our phone lines. The number is 833-877-8255. We've got a question for our candidates, Gina Ortiz-Jones and Rolando Pablos. They are on the runoff ballot for San Antonio City Mayor. If you did not vote in the May election, you still can vote in the June 7th runoff. Let's go to Sister Martha. Sister Martha, and hang on a second. We're going to get that lit up in just a second. Sister Martha, are you there?
Yes.
All right. Okay. Go ahead.
On the first day of Mayor Ron Nirenberg's term, the City Council voted a resolution to make San Antonio a city of compassion. This was in alignment with the International Charter for Compassion. It has to do with working on equity in our city. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. If you are the mayor, how would you further this movement of being a city of compassion?
All right, Sister Martha, thank you for your call. And Gina Ortiz-Jones, you go first.
Yeah, well, thank you. You know, I'm proud of the ways in which, in my own record of public service, I have worked to ensure that we are achieving equity in all ways as possible. You know, I myself am a proud graduate of all Title I schools. Right. And so I know we are compassionate in how we invest in our young people to ensure that we're setting those individuals up for success, but also for our community, which is why on my website, First 100 Days, one of the things I'd like to do is, hey, city staff, help us understand, you know, how many kids, how much talent are we leaving on the table as a result of not fully meeting the need for pre-K in our community, and then show us the bill. I would argue that's a bill we cannot afford to not pay in light of the inequities in our community. And again, there is no, I think, greater demonstration of compassion and of equity than ensuring that we're investing in those things that allow us to ensure everybody can serve to their full potential. I think, you know, compassion also looks like making sure that, you know, we've seen what the DOGE cuts have meant at the federal level. And we've seen this recent bill, again, that is going to defund Medicare, Medicaid, SNAP, et cetera, all the things that are so important in our community, as well as already the cuts to the VA. I think it's important that we have a mayor that is cognizant of how all of those changes are going to impact our community, are impacting our community. And so, you know, when Governor Abbott talks about having a state-level DOGE, a Texas DOGE, again, I'm very concerned because often this has meant cuts to services that benefit the most vulnerable. I myself relied on reduced lunch as a kid. I know what it means to live and to need a Section 8 voucher. I needed one, which is why, again, I'm so focused on making sure we're meeting the need for affordable housing in our community. I think if folks were to go to my website and see the things that I want to work on, each of those things are about ensuring we are moving forward together, which is the greatest demonstration of compassion.
All right. Now, Rolando Pablos, how would you maintain or would you not maintain San Antonio as a city of compassion?
Well, thank you, Sister, for that question. You know, my philosophy of life is a golden rule, and I live by it every day. And I think along the way here in my campaign, you've had an opportunity to see me exercise that. But let me tell you, the best way to be compassionate is to get people out of poverty. 1967, 18% poverty. Today, 18% poverty. We've had the same poverty rate for over 60 years. That is not compassionate. That is a travesty. And let me tell you, I will work hard to make sure that we move the needle on poverty. And so my way of showing compassion is to moving people into the middle class. It's about time we do it. I've laid out my plan to do it, and I'm ready to do it.
Okay, let's go to the next question from a caller, and I believe Sunny is next, and we'll get that. Sunny, are you there?
Hello. Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Sunny. You're on the air, and you're going to ask a question, and it goes to Rolando Pablo first.
Very good. Thank you. Right now, the Texas legislature is considering laws that would fix local zoning to allow commercial real estate property owners and faith-based institutions like churches to create more affordable housing across our state. What is your position on these proposals, and what can you do as a mayor to encourage more multifamily housing, increased supply, and help keep housing prices in check for the residents of our city?
All right, Sunny, thank you for that question. Rolando Pablos, you have 2 minutes for your answer.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for that question. I would be up in Austin right now making sure that we push for anything that helps us improve our housing supply, including land use conditions here. So the one you mentioned, I'm not aware of, but I'll tell you right now, there's a bill that would allow for homes to be built in smaller lots. You know, anything that allows us to increase our supply, removing the impediments that exist right now, especially in land use, allowing me to build a small home for my mom in my backyard where my HOA doesn't allow it, I'm all for it. I think that is one way of ensuring that we increase the supply and that we help our parents and our seniors get into dignified homes. We cannot afford to have our seniors be kicked out of their homes. I've proposed a taxpayer timeout, which also freezes our property tax rates. It's been done in Fort Worth and in El Paso, and I want to do it here. And it basically says that our city manager cannot budget for the next year's budget with the anticipated tax increases. So we would freeze taxes. That would be one way. And then the other way is simply removing the barriers that are preventing us from adding supply. More supply means more affordable homes.
All right. Now, Gina Ortiz-Jones, the same question for you.
Affordable housing is quite personal for me. One of my earliest memories is sharing a queen-size bed. Me, my mom, my sister, and my grandmother, as we were renting a one-bedroom in a home. And so I know the importance of housing affordability as it enables literally everything else. I think it's important that we are being much more aggressive when we are building housing that is affordable, and making sure that we are, you know, if we're using, for example, city resources, that we take into account San Antonio's AMI, not necessarily, you know, the federal definition. Again, as best as we can meet the needs in our community is how we should lean forward. You know, the 2022 bond only allotted for 4,000 affordable housing units. We need much more in light of what the numbers tell us. The Strategic Housing Implementation Plan shows we've got 95,000 families in our community that are housing insecure. We also have 67,000 families on the wait list at Opportunity Home. So affordable housing, we have to be much more aggressive, which is why, you know, on my website, First 100 Days, one of the things I'd like to do is work with the city staff to understand how we can go faster on a couple of kinds of projects. One in particular, those projects that are 70 to 100% affordable, and we can define that appropriately, that also co-locate childcare and that help us meet our transit-oriented objectives. City staff, help us understand how can we go faster on these things. And I think it is important that we are considering those other things, again, because most folks don't only have a housing challenge or only have a childcare challenge or only have a transit challenge. They're oftentimes looking at living these things at the same time. So I think it's important we go faster on those. We work with developers, again, to also ensure we can do that. Because I think housing affordability is also important to meeting some of our other community needs, right? I asked SAISD what they could have used, what could have helped them to prevent those schools from closing. And they were very clear, more affordable housing, which is good for families. It's also good for teachers there.
All right, let's go to another question from our callers. We have Marie. And Marie, you're on the air. Hold on. Marie, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Maria. Sorry. So in a local race where it is intended to be nonpartisan, there are clear signs that this has become a partisanship. Could you please talk to us, each of the mayors, how that occurred and why that is happening? Why is this the case?
All right. Thank you, Maria. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Gina Ortiz-Jones, you have 2 minutes to talk about. Clearly, you have been a Democrat. You've run under the Democratic banner before. And so there's some issues like, how did this become so partisan? What does that, what would that look like as a mayor? Both of y'all, if you get elected as mayor, would y'all be involved in partisan politics, campaigning for other partisan races, you know, or y'all going to be able to leave partisanship outside of City Hall? Mm-hmm. So you have 2 minutes.
Well, I think nonpartisan doesn't mean no principles. So I've spoken out very clearly, for example, my concerns with the DOGE cuts at the federal level and what that could mean if Governor Abbott was able to do a Texas DOGE. And again, who that would impact, again, the most vulnerable in our community. If folks were to look at, you know, the things that I want to work on in the first 100 days and the things that I've been talking about, none of that is partisan. Expanding pre-K for SA in our community, that's not partisan. That is, in fact, actually a contribution to our national security, understanding how many young people in our community ultimately will go serve. Again, addressing the housing affordability challenge in our community and dramatically increasing that supply, that's not partisan. That's ensuring that we can attract young people support the housing needs in our community, but also make sure that we are competitive in attracting young talent to come into our city with those good paying jobs. Bringing more transparency to how major developments downtown are going to be, you know, financed, but then ultimately benefit the community. Those issues are not partisan. I look forward again to working with whoever wants to work on bringing good jobs to our community. And then, yes, speaking truth to power about the ways in which some of these changes in laws, though, and policies have made it harder for San Antonio to grow in the way that we need to. One of the areas I think is frankly nonpartisan and should be a bipartisan approach is how San Antonio, as the 21st largest manufacturing exporting region, how do we work with all of our partners and stakeholders to ensure we grow that? How do we go from 21 to 17 to 14 to, you know, right? I mean, that's going to require investments in infrastructure, certainly working with TxDOT, as well as ensuring that we are attracting corporations to our community, as well as, yes, highlighting the ways in which if we don't have some sufficient medical providers in our community, that is also an economic challenge.
All right. Rolando Pablos, concerns about partisanship in this race, and what would that look like if you become mayor? Would you be able to end partisanship, keep it from coming into the city hall?
So our forefathers who drafted the charter, the city charter, were very wise in knowing that these races must be nonpartisan because they knew that partisanship divides. And that's been happening in the city. We've been divided along partisan lines. And from the very beginning, whenever I first announced that I would run for mayor, I clearly stated that I would not bring partisanship into this seat. The office of mayor needs to remain nonpartisan because that is the only way we're going to be able to bring this community together. And I have fulfilled that. I have put together a broad-based coalition, a citywide broad-based coalition, bipartisan. Democrats, Republicans, Independents are all part of this movement that we have started, and we will bring that to the table. And yes, I will work with our federal, state leaders. I will work with our county leaders, and I'll make sure that I will work with each council person in a supporting role. The mayor is the 11th position on council. It's just one vote. And the mayor needs to bring the power of the mayor's office to each council person in a supporting role so that we can actually get things done. And so I've coined the phrase, check your partisanship at the door. Do not bring it in here, because when you do, that is what divides us. And all those individuals wanting to make this a partisan race are the ones that are dividing this community, and I won't let that happen as mayor.
All right, you're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're having a runoff debate with the candidates for San Antonio mayor, Gina Ortiz-Jones and Rolando Pablos. They're vying to replace Mayor Ron Nuremberg, who has term limited out. Tomorrow, we're going to be joined by the candidates for City Council District 8, Ivales Meza Gonzalez and Paula McGee. And on Wednesday, May 24th, we're going to have you focusing on District 9. Early voting for the runoff begins on Tuesday, 27th, and continues through June 3rd with Election Day on June 7th. If you didn't vote in May, you can still vote in the runoff election on June 7th. Let's go now to our next question from our callers, and I believe Chris is next. And Chris, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So I get a question about it was the base realignment closure stuff. So I know, Ms. Jones, when you were running for Congress, you made it pretty clear that you were for the base realignment
closure. Okay, so just what is your question?
So essentially, there's been a lot of discussion about realignment and restructuring, and I just want to make sure that we don't that we have a mayor in office that can advocate for the military community and ensure that we don't lose jobs.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that question. So let's go to Rolando Pablos first, and you have 2 minutes.
Oh, absolutely. I think the military is a top priority here. Excuse me. And we have to make sure we double down on the military. We already saw the effects of closing our bases in the past. Pardon me. So I would not allow that to happen. And in my experience working with the Pentagon on base closure when I was in El Paso at Fort Bliss, I saw very clearly what needs to be done. And we have to be able to work with the military. The military needs to be part of this community, and we need to be supportive of it. And I would never advocate for base closures at all here in town. I would actually go the other way. I would want to make sure that we go up to Washington and attract more investment from the military, making sure that we have military bases that are strong. And if there's opportunities like the ones we have already with Army North and South of being able to bring jobs to this community, then I will be all over it. I'm actually already working on that in Austin and in Washington to make sure that we take advantage of all of these opportunities that could be brought to San Antonio using our relationships in Washington. So I'm all in.
All right. And 2 minutes for your answer, Gina Ortiz-Jones, about working to maintain and prevent to bring military jobs.
Yeah. So contrary to the misinformation that is out there, I do not support closing military bases. I have said that repeatedly. So I actually look forward to bringing my record of and leadership at the Pentagon to bring more missions to San Antonio. I led that process at the Pentagon, at the Department of the Air Force, as the number two. And so understand the considerations that senior leaders look at in determining where a future military mission should go. And let's be clear. One of those considerations is, in fact, childcare. I don't know if you all remember, but a couple of years ago when San Antonio was competing for a space mission, which was already going to be a reach because there currently isn't one here. But one of the things that we got dinged on as a community is insufficient childcare. So it's important, again, having done this actually, not just talked about it, have it actually been a part of the process of where missions go. I know it's not just, again, is there enough runway? Is there enough, you know, space? But also, you know, what is the quality of life? What is that going to be for the service members? I know how all of those are important. I also look forward to bringing my service as the Undersecretary of the Air Force, in particular, my understanding of space missions to ensure that we grow that. We've got a great, advantage here already with 16th Air Force. And this is actually an opportunity to work with state officials. You know, the governor that wants to work on Cyber Command here in San Antonio, great. I look forward to being a good partner on that and know how we can drive that moving forward, understanding the intersections between space as well as cyber missions, both offensive and defensive. So again, this is where I would absolutely be able to lean into my experience having placed missions all throughout our country and know how we need to work as well with our defense contractors, with the entire ecosystem to ensure that we are as competitive as we can possibly be.
All right, let's talk about Project Marvel for a minute here or two. The way I've been following y'all's answers and we've been talking about these things, sounds like Gina Ortiz-Jones, you're saying that you are maybe reluctant, a slow possible maybe, yes, maybe, if things work out for Project Marvel, if things are in place. And in Rolando Pablos, you're more of a enthusiastic yes on Project Marvel. So correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, give me a kind of a clear idea of where are you on Project Marvel? Maybe judging from your reaction, maybe I've got that wrong. So yeah. Where are you on Project Marvel, Gina Ortiz-Jones?
Yeah.
2 minutes.
Yeah. So I am exactly where every community member that I've spoken to is, which is, how much is this going to cost? Who is going to benefit from it? And who is going to pay, right? A lot of the discussion up until this point has been, how do we pay for it? There's still a lot of people that are, well, what's the it and how does the it benefit our community? So I think if I was mayor, I would have started the conversation a little bit differently. I think we talk about what does the community benefit agreement look like? How can the city ensure that we are getting as much return on investment from any public monies that are used, potentially used on this to ensure, again, this potential generational investment we can use to potentially address our generational inequities. I've said, why can't we be bold? Why can't this be an opportunity to think about funding, for example, you know, pre-K and other needs in our community from now into eternity? Why can't we think in that way and be creative so folks can understand how this is not just, you know, an investment for tourists, but is in fact an opportunity to bring, you know, good paying jobs here for a sufficient number of folks and ensure that, you know, as people look at, again, the history of promises around some of these, they haven't necessarily come to fruition, which is, I think, why it's now important that we are not signing our city up to use city funding on something when we have so many questions that have yet to be answered. So I don't think you negotiate against yourself. I think it's important we have more information, certainly about what the community benefit agreement is going to entail, and then we can move forward. I think you can fight to keep the Spurs, and I think you can ask tough questions to ensure our city gets a good deal. You can do all of those at the same time.
Okay, and so let's go to 2 minutes with Rolando Pablos. Where are you on Project Marvel?
I'm very enthusiastic about this. This is a jobs creation program. This is an economic development program, and it needs to be viewed as that. You know, a larger convention center would mean better conventions, and convention business is good for our city. An arena would be great. It would allow us to keep the Spurs and also continue to enjoy their tremendous economic impact that they have in this community, which is in excess of $500 million a year. It would also allow us to continue to have an Alamo Dome that has been delivering year after year after year. The economic impact of the Alamo Dome is incredible. It just, with Final Four, we just had $400 million of economic impact that came here. So all of that combined is a plus for this community. It's a win-win for this community. We have to figure out how we're going to finance it. We have to figure out what it means with the entertainment district. I would want to make sure that that entertainment district is comparable to the entertainment districts that we're seeing in other parts of Texas and other cities. We are competing with those cities for convention business, for tourism dollars. And let me tell you, one of our revenue sources as a city is sales tax. And we have to make sure that we improve our sales tax revenue. And by attracting visitors here, not only in that arena, but also in, say, medical tourism and other areas, retail tourism, we can make the city a better city that can actually compete. But look, I don't want to play the same game Seattle played when they lost the Sonics to Oklahoma City. They didn't want to invest in their arena, and they lost the team. And now it's been 14 years, and they haven't been able to recuperate from that. I want to make sure that we keep the Spurs, but also that we create a world-class entertainment complex that allows us to bring more visitors here, and that means more revenue for us.
Can I add something?
Well, good tech. I'm going to have a follow-up question.
Okay.
So the follow-up question is the concern that many people have about Project Marvel is that it will suck up all of the hotel-motel revenue tax dollars, that we occupancy tax dollars, and all other kind of funding that we have for discretionary use in San Antonio. Things like the Guadalupe Cultural Arts Center may not be able to get the funding that it usually has. Other organizations that depend upon those hotel motel occupancy tax dollars for funding for arts and development in San Antonio are all going to be going towards the Project Marvel and leave nothing for anyone else. So Rolando Pablos, 2 minutes, can you talk about, you know, why people have that concern? Have you heard that concern? Should they be concerned?
Well, this is the first I hear of it, but look, all of those organizations that are benefiting from that right now should step up and should ensure that the funding is not going to be taken away from them. And I'll tell you right now, if whatever it is that they're doing is yielding results for the taxpayer, for the community, then they should have nothing to fear. But like I said earlier, you know, I want to make sure that this Project Marvel benefits the entire community. I've already proposed a plan that would benefit all 10 districts. I want to see the revenues from this project put into a sinking fund that can then be divided into 10 equal parts so that every district can use that money for two reasons: infrastructure and public safety. And that way we can guarantee that everyone in this community benefits from it, not just one district or two districts.
All right, Gina Ortiz-Jones, you have 2 minutes to respond to that about how do we make sure that Project Marvel, if it does get a green light, doesn't suck up all of the available resources.
Well, this is why I've been, again, wanting to make sure we have as much information as possible before we are committing to city funding. Because, yes, as mentioned, you know, those resources have traditionally also gone toward major investments in our community that we as a have benefited from. The Tobin Center, right? Investments on Museum Reach. So there are other ways in which we might consider using these resources. And I think it's important, you know, as the arts community, you know, this is that is actually you sharing that is not the first time I have heard that. I have routinely engaged with our arts community, which is, again, so a critical and frankly, a gift in our community, given their nearly $5 billion contributing to our economy each year. One of the things, for example, we were just at the Conjunto Festival at Rosedale Park. And so understanding how some of these investments could ensure that Rosedale supports a Conjunto Festival that is three times, right, what it currently is, I think is important. We should have those conversations again about, you know, if we invest in it, if this all goes toward one thing, this is what the ROI is. However, if we looked at some of these other things that are important to shore up that also contribute to our economy in major ways, you know, how does that ensure that we are benefiting and supporting as many parts of this throughout our community? So, this is the time to negotiate, because a lot of what has been said is, well, it could be this, it could be that. Yeah, it could be. And let's not forget, though, what Nelson Wolf said about the deal he negotiated for the AT&T Center, which was using public resources to build the AT&T Center. He said we were supposed to get 20% of Spurs profits every year in exchange. He said, ask me how much we got over 20 years. Zero. He has not said anything different than that. So I think it's important that we fight hard for a good deal.
All right. Gina Ortiz-Jones, 2 minutes for this next response here. What grade would you give Ron Nirenberg for his tenure as San Antonio mayor? What would you try to do differently or try to continue?
I think a grade, eh? Let's see. I think he's done a good job. I think he has, in particular, you know, it was a masterclass. I think it was a masterclass, he and Nelson Wolf, during the pandemic, how well they kept the community informed about what was happening, the ways in which we needed to take precautions to keep ourselves and our community safe, as well as show the tight connection between the city and the county during such a an emergency and such a public health crisis. So I've appreciated that. I think the Ready to Work program is a good example of kind of where our city's heart is in the right place. And now the data shows that we have an opportunity to build upon that. So, you know, the housing bond, I think, is also a good example of, you know, we kind of got our feet wet, and 4,000 units is a good start. But we now need to be much more aggressive in the next bond. But I think, you know, we were able to learn from that based on, you know, him pushing on that. So I commend him for those efforts and look forward to building upon that.
So a passing grade?
More than a passing grade. He did a great
job. All right. Yeah. So Rolando Pablos, what grade would you give Ron Nirenberg for his years as mayor of San Antonio?
Well, I think, you know, looking into the future, because a lot of what Ron has done has yet to really, you know, show itself, particularly things like Ready to Work. That's when I think we'll be in a better position to understand that. But I'll tell you right now, Ready to Work was a great program. It was a great idea, a great concept, you know, investing taxpayer money in upskilling, educating our workforce is a tremendous idea. And so I do commend him for that. Now, the way in which it was handled, I don't know if it was beyond his, jurisdiction, but it wasn't very good. So what I would want to do is I'd want to take that program, look at where it failed, and, you know, bring in a turnaround specialist. I've been a turnaround specialist for many corporations, so I'll be able to get in there and fix it. And then we can see exactly what those results will be. So, you know, I think all in all, history will be kind to Ron. But right now, we have to make sure that those projects that he started that make sense, you know, continue in a way where it can deliver the results that it was intended.
So a passing grade for Ron?
A passing grade, yes.
Passing grade.
Yes.
Okay, all right. Let's go to Robert on the phones. And Robert, are you there? And Robert.
Yes.
Okay, Robert, yes. You're on the air, and your question will be answered first by Rolando Pavlos.
Oh, okay. So I'm part of the Quintana Neighborhood Association on the southwest side of town. I've lived here my entire life, and with my brother serving as a San Antonio police officer for over 20 years, I know he backs me up when I say that the Quintana neighborhood we were raised in has seen such an increase in crime and poverty, which has understandably made families anxious about their safety. So I want to ask point blank, will you commit to not decreasing the city's funding for police, fire, and first responders? Thank you.
All right, Robert, thank you for your call. Appreciate that. And so Rolando Pavlos, maintaining funding for the city's police and other first responders.
Well, thank you for that question. I've been to your neighborhood many, many, many times over the many, many years. And I agree with you. I think that the crime situation has gotten worse. You know, I do believe that there are opportunities, especially through the Safe Officer Program, to come in and make a difference. Also in economic development, improving that entire community, uplifting it with Port San Antonio, bringing more investment to that community. Also investing in infrastructure, you know, street lighting and all those things that make a difference for public safety, I think are very important. I've already made a commitment, and I've been very clear that we will not decrease the police budget or fire or EMS. If anything, I'm going to look to increase it because that is exactly what is needed as we fall short with police officer numbers. And also as we look to focusing on prevention. We have soft on crime policies here in town that don't punish our criminals. From what I understand, there are 17,000 felony cases that have not been resolved over at the DA's office. So we also have to make sure that we put pressure on our DA to look at those cases and make sure that the people who need to be punished get punished, because right now there's no repercussion. So in your neighborhood, you will have improved police presence. You'll also have the availability of prevention programs that will help the community, particularly our youth, to stay out of trouble. And to make sure that our seniors and all of those who want to enjoy their community and take a walk in their neighborhood can do so without the fear of criminals coming down on them. So you have my commitment in ensuring that we don't reduce the budget.
All right. Gina Ortiz-Jones, will you maintain the police first responder budget?
I think it's really important that we fund those, as we would say in the military, those no-fail missions. And certainly as a veteran, national security leader, a leader's number one job is to keep people safe. So, you know, Governor Abbott has signed into law the inability for municipalities to reduce those budgets. So that's already there. That protection is already there. I am very concerned, though, about the things that are getting defunded. As I mentioned, Social Security, Medicaid, SNAP, all of those things that keep our community economically secure. I am also very concerned about, I want to make sure our police officers are focused on addressing the violent crimes in our community. And so I do not believe our police officers, local law enforcement, should be used as ICE agents in our community. I think that, again, takes them away from addressing the violent crimes that are actually threatening our community. I'm also concerned, you know, when people in our community are being taken advantage of, either domestic violence or wage theft, and they don't feel, as a result of these, these changes and unfortunate attempts to make it so that people cannot call the very people there to keep them safe, our community is less safe in general. You know, I'm concerned about when folks don't feel comfortable sending their kids to school, when the folks don't feel comfortable going to, you know, their religious services because they don't know if there may be ICE, immigration enforcement that is happening there. It's really important that we think about what contributes to our economic security, but also our physical safety. And that is ensuring that local law enforcement is focus on addressing the most violent crime. So I look forward to being a good partner to ensure that continues to be the case.
All right, but the San Antonio City Manager Eric Walsh is predicting that the city budget will need cuts due to falling revenue. The falling revenue situation is happening everywhere across Texas, not just San Antonio. So what would you protect, though, aside from police and firefighters? Would libraries, are they going to see cutbacks, animal care services, parks? When it comes to cuts, what else is off the table for you, Gina Ortiz-Jones?
Well, you know, we had, I was thankful for the kind of initial conversation that I had with Eric to understand just kind of generally the lay of the land as they understand it now. But I've been very clear, we need to fund our no-fail missions. We need to minimize any impacts to the most vulnerable in our community. Again, I've been to the Walker Ranch Senior Center in District 9, and I was actually there during one of their birthday celebrations. And to see firsthand, you know, 200-some-odd seniors get a lunch, and the staff told me that, hey, that was gone in 15 minutes, right? And so there is a great need in our community, and we certainly don't want to be balancing the budget on the backs of the most vulnerable. So I commit to ensuring we're minimizing any impacts there, as well as minimizing any long-term impacts as a result of any changes in the budget. One area that I'm very sensitive to as well, given, unfortunately, the misinformation and disinformation around public health at the federal level and at the state level, is ensuring that we have an adequately resourced Metro Health. You know, the fact that we're dealing with measles in the year of our Lord 2025 speaks to the importance of making sure we've got good information about public health getting out, but also that we have the resources to collect that data to ensure we are investing in prevention as well as in investing in those resources that are going to keep our community safe. So that'd be an important resource for me moving forward.
All right, let's go to another call from, I need to get your response on that one. Sorry about that, Rolando Pablos. You got 2 minutes to talk about what else you would protect from the budget acts.
Well, you know, you don't balance the budget just on making cuts. You also want to make sure that you improve the top line, which is our revenue. So my first question would be, how do we bring in new tax revenue without increasing taxes on any of us? And the way you do that is by increasing the tax base, making sure that we bring in more visitors here who are going to buy things and pay sales tax, and also bring in new investment, companies that are going to come here and buy property and pay property taxes, people who are going to live here and buy homes and pay property taxes. So I would also look at really moving forward quickly on the top line, which is bringing in new investment, new visitors. On the bottom line, what I would do is I would first and foremost look at what where the wasteful spending is, because I can assure you that if we take a deep dive into our city spending, we will be able to find efficiencies. I've proposed setting up a sunset commission, which is an efficiency mechanism that will force us to take a look at each program, department, board, and commission that the city is funding to ensure that our taxpayer money is being spent wisely. I think taxpayer protection is a top priority. We have to make sure that taxpayers get the return on their investment, that they know that we're managing their money wisely and on the things that really matter, which are basic services. Everything else should be deprioritized.
All right. To manage our time, this next question I'm going to ask you, we'll only have like 1 minute for response. So Rolando Pablos is going to ask you this question. 1 minute response, please. So the downtown horse carriages have been ordered to end operation by January 1st, 2030 by the city council vote. Did you support that vote? Would you try to reverse it if you're elected mayor? Should the city council be able to end an industry that isn't breaking any laws or endangering the public?
Let me make it very clear. I would bring them back immediately. I think that was unfair. They're small business people. I think that there are other things that could have been done to, you know, allay the concerns of whatever the concerns were of people. But when you take government and you go up against a cottage industry like this, a small business industry like this, I think it's unfair. And this is exactly what's been happening. We've been frustrating our small businesses. Look at the street closures. Look at the burdensome regulations that we impose on these small businesses. And this was a direct attack on small business, and I will work to reverse that immediately.
All right. Gina Ortiz-Jones, what did you think about the ending the horse-drawn carriage businesses downtown? What would you do about that if elected mayor?
Yeah. I support that. I think it's important that we look at mobility options downtown to ensure that folks can get from point A to point B in as many ways as possible, which is not only good for the residents living downtown, but is also good for the tourists. One of the things I think we need to make sure that we're also thinking about downtown is, again, walkability and shade and all these other things that contribute to a great downtown, and that's what I'd be focused on. I think when it comes to small businesses, you know, Centro, the folks that are in charge of the Central Business District, they've got a goal to have 75% of the local storefronts there filled by local small businesses. I look forward to working with them and with our small businesses to ensure we actually meet that. And it's not just a goal on paper, but is a goal in reality. I've met wonderful small business owners all throughout. One of them in particular is with Domesticas Unidas, and she has started her own kind of soap making business. And those are the kinds of things that I think are authentic and that we can support to have in our downtown as well.
All right, now we go to our 1 minute closing statements. And Gina Ortiz Jones, you have 1 minute for your closing statement.
Well, great. Well, thank you again for the time. I appreciate the opportunity. I look forward to being a mayor for all of San Antonio. My record in public service has always been about upholding my oath to the Constitution and, as possible, leaning forward to ensure that everybody could serve to their full potential, knocking down barriers. Because, again, when everybody has an opportunity to do that, we all do well. I think we have seen in our city, unfortunately, too much attention paid to a very small segment of the community. And that has resulted in the widespread inequities that we see and will continue to see if we have somebody, if we don't have somebody adequately focused on, again, the foundationals, but also addressing that, you know, we're not balancing the budget. We're not doing a Texas-style DOGE or a San Antonio DOGE in the way that we're seeing at the federal level as well as at the state level by those folks. We've got to make sure San Antonio is moving forward. I look forward to being a mayor for all, and I would be honored to have your vote.
All right, and now the last word. Rolando Pavlos, you have 1 minute.
Yes, thank you. I'm a multifaceted candidate. I bring government, business, and economic development experience. Experience matters. Qualifications matter. And let me tell you, in this situation, we are about to face some strong headwinds. We're getting into choppy waters. And you need a mayor who can safely guide us through the storm and get us to the other side. And I am that person. You know, 14,000 men and women who work for the city have to fill out job applications, submit their resumes. They have to go through background checks. And nobody's asking that of us. And so I would ask you to please take a look at our backgrounds. Take a look at who we are. Ask us for our resume. Ensure that what we've done in this community and elsewhere allow us to come in and do a good job for our city. And I am that person. I believe that I have the integrity, the experience, the qualifications, and the relationships to take our city into a new direction.
All right. Rolando Pavlos and Gina Ortiz Jones are the two runoff candidates in the race for San Antonio mayor. Early voting begins tomorrow, Tuesday. These two candidates represent two very different views about how to tackle challenges facing San Antonio. So it's up to you, the voter, to decide which way San Antonio will go. This is the first four-year term that we're electing to a mayor. Every vote counts. If you're not voting, I don't know what you're doing, because you need to be voting. This is really, really important. So thank you so much. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation. Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.